Well, it is the beginning of January still. And even though it's the 7th, it still kind of feels like the first week. I don't know, is anyone tired? No? You guys are all fine now. You guys are ready to go. Now, the holidays, as great as they are, they can really leave us a bit tired. Hopefully not tired in our souls, but also, yeah, some of that too, because not all of our families are always super fun to hang out with. I totally get it. My family's a train wreck. Believe me, I completely get that. Sometimes we feel in the midst of groups of people who should know us and don't. Sometimes we feel a bit more lonely than we would normally. Sometimes you might be working loads. Sometimes work is full on. And then there's all the food that must be eaten. And of course, that leaves us tired as well. But our tiredness isn't just a seasonal thing. We are weary people. In all of history, nobody has ever lived like we have lived. Ever. Nobody ever has. And yet we are depressed. Suicide rates are always really high. And we aren't satisfied. We are tired. We're burdened. We're depressed. Life should be easy, but it doesn't really feel that way. It feels difficult. And everyone knows this is a problem. I mean, the UK has a loneliness minister in government. We know this is a problem. Now, when we're in it, when we're in that kind of tired-ishness, and if we aren't, we will at some point, so just kind of wait. When we're in it, what we want is relief. We want some rest, and many places will offer it. Adverts on TV promise rest in the form of like a toothpaste tube or a new mop. Like somehow this is going to like make change your world. The new year, I mean, this is the time to join a gym. I worked as a personal trainer in a gym for lots of years, and here's the truth about gyms. The reason why they stay open is for all the people who pay and never show up. That's the only way a gym stays open. If the gym only stayed open because if people came, they would all be out of business. The gym promises a type of rest. Renewing the outside is going to leave me renewed on the inside. And you can now be at rest knowing you are truly healthy. Now, streaming services promise all you need is a night in, and that's going to get you going for the rest of the week. That holiday to look forward to, especially during this dark winter month. So it was actually sunny today, so thank you, Lord, for that. But, you know, when it's February, in the middle of February, and you're like, at least I have that holiday going on. There's a promise of rest that's out there. So there's consumerism that offers some level of rest. It's not like it's not rest. It is, but it's some aspect of it, as long as you have the money to buy it. But, of course, there's more. There's this, like, idealized vision of a family that we can have. The perfect amount of kids with the kind of house and the lifestyle, you'll have rest. Not physical rest, of course, because kids are something. But you'll have rest in your heart, you'll have rest in your soul, and you'll feel renewed, you'll feel satisfied. I mean, I always laugh at the combination of mattress and sleep adverts on TV and then the sheer amount of coffee houses that we have out on the street. Surely that shows us we have a problem with rest. We don't really have that part down. There are many options, many promises out there that give us rest, that say that our innermost being will be rested. But there's nothing that we can buy or create for ourselves that will give it. They all try, all these other things they try, and they give some level of it, but not really ultimately what we need. They're not going to give us real rest, like capital R kind of rest. There is a rest out there that is beyond us. It's beyond us being able to reach for it ourselves. There's a rest that's deeper than all the things that we just mentioned, a rest that always does actually come through on its promises, unlike everything that we've already mentioned. It's a rest that when you have it, it's powerful. It renews who you are. Have you ever had a rest that transforms your very being? Like, it doesn't matter how many shows of Seinfeld I might watch in the evening, that is not going to transform my being into something awesome the next day. It's just not going to happen. This kind of deep, capital R kind of rest. We can't buy it, but the good news, it was already bought for us. Yeah, we can't reach it, but the good news, it was already reached out and brought to us. So there is a hope for the tired. There's a hope for the weary, a hope for the burdened, those who are under not just the yoke of life, but the yoke of death. There is a real hope rooted in real rest, and this is what Jesus gives us, and he loves to do it. He doesn't just kind of sort of get it. He gives everything that he has to us. Early January is when you might be tempted to make resolutions for the year. Maybe that's not you. I am a nerd. I love that kind of stuff. I love planning. I love like goal setting. I'm very like externally motivated and all that kind of stuff. And it can be a helpful process sometimes. But this first message of the new year is not going to be do more. It's not going to be how to plan. It's going to be rest more. Rest more. I'm convinced that we will thrive when we work out of rest instead of try and work for it. Because working for it will never come. Whatever goal you set for yourself, in whatever way you do it, there's an important step needed before everything. It's where am I? Before we talk about where we're going, you have to ask where am I? Same thing if you're looking at a sat nav, you have to figure out where you are in order to where to go. You can't make a resolution outside of rest. I mean, you can make a resolution outside of rest. It's just, it's madness. Like, driving with your eyes shut. How are you going to possibly know what to do? We must find our rest in order to find our resolutions. And if we want any kind of change, if we want any kind of revolution in our lives, it must start with rest. Rest before a resolution can lead to revolutions. But let's talk about the background of these verses here. And what we've kind of done is we've jumped in the middle of this of Matthew 11. And Jesus here is talking to the Father. He's praying to God. And so what we're kind of like jumping in and Jesus talking to the Father, but he's doing it out loud so that other people will hear it. And in the middle of Jesus talking to the Father, he's talking to us. And he says, oh yeah, also all of you, this that I have right here, you can have that. Not just some of it, you can have all of this. All of this, you can have that. Come to me, I'm going to give it to you. It's called rest. It's not just a human level rest. It's a rest that comes from knowing God himself. The one who reveals God, knows God, enjoys God, is God. But before we go talk about where we're going, let's talk about where we are. So Jesus says, come to me, but he says he's talking to a certain group of people. All you who are weary and burdened. And that's where we are. All you who are weary and burdened. Now these aren't just two words for the same thing, weary and burdened. They kind of mean two different things. If we look at that word weary, it means you're tired, you're burned out, you've worked loads, and you're not really getting anything in return. This is a metaphor for the requirements of living made by the religious leaders of the time. Scribes, Pharisees, they all had a high bar for how someone should live. They made people weary. The goal of perfection is never encouraging. It's always demoralizing. Never, if I aim for perfect, I will always never make it. And so why would I ever want to keep doing it? And that's what religion does. Weary is an individual weight that we find ourselves under. Now, burdened is another thing. It's another word in there. And other translations use this word laden, like heavy laden, like there's a weight, a burden on you. There's something on top of you. You can't stand straight because there's a weight over you. You're bent over. There's a yoke. Now, I am not really into farming. So if you aren't really into farming and don't know what a yoke is, there's a yoke. You put that around the oxen that you're trying to drive, I guess. I don't know what you do to drive. I don't know what the word for oxen going forward is. But you put these around the oxen so that they stay on the line that you want them to stay on. And that keeps them bent over. They can't do whatever they want to do. It keeps them on a particular line. That's what a yoke is. If weary is a more individual problem, burden is a more systemic problem. It's legal or social or political pressure. The pressures of society. Now, that's on us as well. Not just the individual thing of needing to be good all the time, that religious kind of impulse that we have. But there's also that like systemic oppression that's on us as well. This can be everything from like the cost of living crisis to a culture hostile to the gospel, asking you to believe, requiring you to believe all the things that they believe. We are weary and we're heavy burdened. It's individual and it's systemic, both of those things. But there's more to this story because we aren't just the oppressed. We're also the oppressors. We individually contribute to other people's weariness. We contribute to our own weariness every time we sin individually. That's what we do. And we are, as broken people, are also part of broken systems, and we help perpetuate those broken systems. So maybe some of those things we're ignorant of, but some of them maybe we're not so ignorant of. But whether we know about it or not, one thing is true. We aren't only victims. We are perpetrators as well. We need rest. Yes, we feel that. But do we also feel the need that we have to be forgiven? Because without forgiveness, there is no rest. Sometimes this world can feel like a vampire, stealing our own blood from us, leaving us empty. Smashing Pumpkins were right. The world is a vampire. I'm seeing them in June, so that's why I got them in my head. Even as it promises to give us more, the world always promises to give us more. Never really comes through. At the end of the day, we end up used up. We don't have enough for ourselves. We certainly don't have enough for other people. All this builds up to the ultimate burden and yoke, death itself. Humanity has a burden that we each bear individually. It bends us over, bends our back. We get snapped in half. We can't stand up straight. We can't be who we truly are. We as humans, we also have a rope, a yoke around our necks, so heavy it drags us down, taking away our energy, lowering us until we end up in the dirt for good. Death is the ultimate destination for the weary and burdened who don't find rest. And so what can straighten our backs out? What can give us life in a world that steals it away so easily? Well, Jesus says, come to me. He says, come to me. Notice he doesn't say, go to God. He doesn't say, go make yourself good and God will come to you. He doesn't say, I'll teach you about God. Even though he does all those, he does that. He says, come to me. He himself is able to give individual rest, able to give systemic rest, the forgiveness that we need so that we can stand up straight now, and so that the grave won't be our final destination. See, this is a universal invitation. Who is Jesus asking to come to him? Everyone who's weary, everyone who's burdened, everyone who's tired, all the needy. This is what little children know better than wise and supposed learned adults. The prerequisite to coming to Jesus is having needs, is asking for stuff. Jesus does say there are requirements. It's not like we're freed in order to do whatever we want, to live in any kind of way that we want. There is a yoke to take, but unlike every other yoke, the yoke that Jesus has is light. It doesn't hold us down, it brings us up. There is a burden to take, but unlike every other burden, his is light. So it's not no yoke, not no burden, but a new kind of yoke, a new kind of burden. And here's where the metaphor fails a bit, because it doesn't add to oppression, it relieves it. I don't know anything else in the world that does that. Somehow this yoke gives rest and does not give trouble, the opposite of every other kind of yoke that's out there. So he tells us more. Jesus says, he doesn't just say, come to me. He also says, learn from me. So a yoke implies some kind of learning, some kind of discipline of coming to God over and over and over again, some kind of obedience. Taking Jesus' yoke is learning from him, walking with him. There's another word for that called discipleship. And it's a whole life process. It includes what we're doing now as a group of people on a Sunday, but it's also more than this as well, because this is not sufficient in itself to give all of our lives the discipleship that it needs, which is why we have things like missional communities where we meet throughout the week, meant to be hubs of whole life kind of learning. And even within missional communities, our smaller groups called core groups, where we really can dig in with our lives and really can dig in with the Word. Now look, for all of us, we will be going somewhere. We're not just, all of us go somewhere with our lives, walking somewhere, bearing some kind of yoke of some sort. And sometimes, our biggest problem isn't the yoke that we have, but when we're searching for the right one. Without a direction in life, we become aimless, we wander around. The big questions in life remain questions. Now, it's not that we shouldn't question stuff, but the reason to ask the question is to get an answer. If we stay in questioning all the time, we just wander around with our lives. Most of modernity has been trying to shed the yoke of oppression. Of course, there's really good stuff about that. But that's only half the job. It's one thing to remove a bad yoke. The second question is, what are we going to put on? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? We will always put on something. And only what Jesus offers here can give us what we want and give us what we need. But also, it's not just a future thing. Jesus gives it to us now. We get to experience it right now. It removes the oppression of the weary and the burden, the oppression outside with those against us, but also the oppression within us. Our impulses to not live in the way that we ought to, in our dark hearts, the ones that really need forgiveness. Now, this is not just for us, and if it was just for us, that'd be a pretty good deal. But it's even more. Those who are without chains have the freedom and ability to free those who are still in them. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. What does Jesus ask of ourselves? Well, we already talked about this. Come to him. What does that mean? Come to Jesus. Well, it means first, don't come to anything else. Don't go to anything else. When you wake up, come to him first. When you're under it, come to him. Bring the burdens you have to him. This does happen individually through prayer. We speak to him and tell him what we need and ask him to come through for us. But Jesus here in Matthew 11, and I talk about this often whenever it comes up because we have very individualistic eyes that we read the Bible with. These are all plural verbs. He's not talking to you individually. He's not. It's not the words that we just read. It's you plural. Us as a people, as a group of people working together, as a family, formed by the gospel, on his mission. So we speak to him, and we tell him what we need, and we ask him to come through for us. But with the plural commands, it means we must do this together. Not every single time we pray, but probably more often than we do. So how do we come to him together? Sundays, yes, we're doing it right now. But what about the majority of the week, all the other hours we live? We are created to bear each other's burdens. Literally what we're made to do. This is how Jesus is going to bear your burden through his church. That's why the church is set up. He set it up that way. We didn't figure this thing out. He did. When you don't share your burden with someone else, you are acting as if you can handle it. And we both know that you can't. Don't try and fool anybody. No one's fooled by that. Nobody thinks you can. But also what you're doing is you're preventing someone from being who Jesus has created them to be a fellow burden sharer. If you don't share your burdens, that means it's bad for you, but it's also for that person who is meant to share the burdens with you. So one way we come to him with our burdens is to share it with others as we bring it to him. And if you need help with prayer, we have, I don't even know if they're out, I should have checked ahead of time. We have these prayer cards that are very, very simple, basic kind of bookmarking things. That if you're like, I just need some kind of focus on how I'm going to pray. Or when I wake up, my brain isn't working, and so I just read, you know, the things I can put in here. That's what's most helpful for me. As soon as I'm waking up, I don't want to think about what I want to pray about. I just want to pray, but I can't because I can't think. Well, if I write it down ahead of time, it makes it a lot easier. So grab one of those if that's helpful. And there's, with that, there's a prayer course that might be helpful as well. Okay, so we come to Jesus. Jesus also tells us another thing. So we come to him. Jesus also tells us to learn from him. And that's what taking his yoke and burden means. If we aren't listening to his words to us, this is going to be impossible. How can you learn from somebody and then tell them to shut up? It doesn't work, right? We think we'll be fighting his battles, but how could we know? To learn from Jesus is to surrender our ideas about everything to his. A bad idea is a very easy thing to surrender to Jesus, because you already know it's bad. What's really difficult is surrendering what you think might be good ideas to Jesus. That I found to be the most difficult thing, because you think it's pretty good. And you're like, I'm fine here. I don't really need to worry about it. But really, that's where the surrendering really, really works. Whatever we think is a good idea, especially when we think they're good ideas, we surrender that to him. So I think too many of us, all of us, spend our time crafting our own yoke, doing what we think is right in our own eyes. To do what's right in your own eyes is the way the Bible describes people who are completely lost. There's a whole book about it. It's called Judges. The people who were lost were described as doing what was right in their own eyes. We don't put on our own yoke. Even if we think it's great, we put on his. And that requires us to know him, to listen to him. We spend time individually, but also together. And mission communities are just one way that we do that. That's why we call them gospel. They ought to be gospel form, because they should be centered on reading Jesus' words to us. The Bible is central to all things. Closing the Bible and not connecting to it is basically asking God to close his mouth. I don't want you to talk, God, because I don't want to bring this up. Again, if you need help with that, we have yet another bookmark. We've built bookmarks here. Now, there's a kind of how to read the Bible, but there is a tick box for every single chapter of the Bible that's not connected to a date. Because sometimes, if you ever tried a Bible reading plan, and you're like, oh man, I missed Monday. And then on Tuesday, you're like, I can read Monday and Tuesday. And then you miss Tuesday. Like, oh my gosh, Monday and Tuesday, I'm going to be here for hours. Don't worry about that. You can just tick it off. And you, what do I read next? Whatever is next on the list there. Exodus, I just read Exodus 4 yesterday, or whatever it is. Now I read Exodus 5, whenever the day is. You don't have to worry about all the kind of extra buildup. I don't know if you guys are like that. I'm like that. I'm weird that way, maybe. But there's also, we did have a kind of how to read the Bible, very basic intro course as well. And as with everything that is basic about the gospel, we never really graduate beyond those things. So if that's a helpful thing, those are in the back, and snag some of that. Now, when we learn from him, what he does in his grace is he shapes our imagination of what this world could be like, as well as guides us in the day-to-day life that we normally live. So Jesus says, come to me, learn from me. So that's what we do. We go to him and we learn from him. This is what Redeemer has been all about from the beginning, and none of us are perfect with this, which is why we continually go to him and learn from him. Now imagine a whole church that is working out of rest, not out of a burden. Imagine a whole church is working not to get rest, but because we've already found it, and we have so much of it, we can work like crazy and do the things that we really want to do. This is how Jesus talked about work. In fact, the way that Jesus described work in John 6 or 5 or 6 was that he called it the Father's bread. He called it bread. His work gave him energy because he was always working from God's rest. This is what it means to work out of rest. I mean, if that sounds attractive, to be able to do something that actually encourages you, imagine a community of people doing this all together. Let's spend our time going to Christ, learning from Christ. Let's get the best that we can and not waste time with what will eventually burden us anyway. So, and we come and we listen. What does Jesus say that we get? So come to me. Why? Because he is going to give us rest. Rest is refreshment. It's renewal. I mean, do you feel new each day? Or does every day just feel like a little part of you just been like shaved off slightly? Jesus says you can be new. He says you will find rest for your souls. The soul is the Greek way of talking about the way the Hebrews would talk about the heart. It's the innermost being of who you are, the most fundamental being of who you are. Sometimes the Bible uses heart for that, but heart and soul, it's the same general idea. The most fundamental thing that makes you, you, this is the thing that is going to be refreshed, that's going to be renewed. This is beyond new toothpaste, beyond a holiday, right? Who can really promise delivering rest for our souls to come through? Only God can, only He has. Over and over, as in one example, during the Exodus in the Old Testament, the Israelites are going around, they're wandering around, they're like kind of lost, but just running around in circles for decades. God to His people. These people are weary. These people are burdened, wandering around. There's a promise of rest. God says in Exodus 33, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." And the promise for these people was in another place, a rest in a different place, a place called the Promised Land. Rest when we follow in His way. Rest when we're obedient to Him. It's been the same. One could say, actually, the whole theme of this book, from the very beginning to the very end, is a father offering his children rest. You can see that's the biggest theme in this Bible. We were born into rest in the first two chapters of Genesis. And we disrupted that by trying to do what was right in our own eyes, as we always do. We chose weariness and chose being burdened instead of getting His rest. But then, even in chapter 3, there's a promise of rest to come. And what we look to in the future is the heavens and earth to be at rest with each other. In the very end of this book, in Revelation 21 and 22, we're given a slight peek into what will come, our future home, the thing that we're looking forward to, our future home. It's not us whisked away from this earth, flying away. It's heaven coming down to us, is the image that we're given. The heavens will come down to us and not only give us rest, but give the earth rest. Everything, the whole world, everything will be put right. Yes, us, but also everything else. And heaven is able to come down because Jesus came down first. He came down to earth and spoke these life-giving words to us. These seemed too good to be true. Then Jesus made them true. He went to a cross, took on the punishment that all burdens and all yokes have brought on. Our own sin, the sin of others. He took on all the darkness of those who know Him. And then He went further down. He went down into death, further down than any of us will ever go. He did this so that we wouldn't experience the burden and the yoke any longer. And now we're freed from the oppression of other yokes. And we're given the forgiveness that our own oppressive hearts need. Now, He didn't just go down. He also went up into death, into resurrected life. Christ's resurrection is His new life. And He is still living that. One that He generously gives to all who come to Him. The burdens and the yokes, those are all destroyed now. He destroyed them all. The biggest oppressor of all, death, the biggest yoke of all, death, has been defeated, has been crushed. So let's not do this. Let's not pick up a yoke off the dead ground and place it on our necks again. Let's listen to Jesus. Let's learn from Him. Take on His yoke as we walk with Him for the rest of our lives. This is the only way to find rest for our souls. The only way to find rest for who we really are. To get that refreshment that we want, that we need. To be rescued from oppression outside and within. Now, this is how you as an individual can live into this rest. Come to Him and learn from Him. It's really basic. It's really simple. It's not that it's difficult to understand, just difficult to do. And the only way we can do this individually is if we do it as a family. Because you can't do it by yourself. When we learn from Jesus, one of the things He tells us is we must do it together. It's not an option. It's not like, you could if you want, or a church might be a good idea. There is no example of a solo Christian in this book. There's none. Well, maybe there is, and they're just called immature. So as God is crafting this family, we come to Jesus. So we don't go anywhere else because He has what we need. As God is crafting this family, we listen to Him, not to our own ideas of how things should work, but to what He says. And as we do this, and only then, can we make plans and goals and resolutions and those kinds of things. We're called to work out of the rest of God. This is a very different thing than working for the rest of God. In fact, that difference is the difference between Christianity and every other way of life, every other philosophy, every other religion. That's what makes Christianity different and unique. Only Jesus promises rest that has already been bought for us. All other ways of life require one to buy rest, either by paying actual money or by living some kind of way. Jesus says, you don't have enough money. I don't care how rich you are, Jeff Bezos. You don't have enough money. You can't live well enough. I don't know how perfect you are. Whatever example of someone living perfectly. Jesus has done all of this for us. Here is the gift. Now live as if you've been given this gift. Why would we live any other way if we haven't? That's what an easy yoke is like. That's what a light burden is like. And so what does living from rest look like in the day-to-day? Well, it means not working to get rest, but working from it. You've heard that a few times. Yeah, I'm repeating it, because we need to hear it over and over again. It means not striving for forgiveness, but living from it, because Jesus has already forgiven us. This is the essence and uniqueness of Christianity. We do not earn, we receive. Now, this doesn't mean we don't work. Yeah, we do. It means when we do, though, we do it differently. I mean, look at Jesus' life. Sort of busy guy. He's out there doing a few things. Healing people, making loaves and bread, like multiply out of nowhere, which sounds like an awesome thing. Wine and bread, like this is a guy you want to hang out with. And if you have a busted arm, he'll heal that one too while he's at it. He would work until he was physically faint, right? So he's doing a lot of work. But he never worked. He always worked from the rest of God. And he was able to pour himself out, as we all should do. The only way for us to really work hard, the only way for us to really connect with the passions in our hearts, to see the things that we want to see done in this world, is to work from the rest of God. That's the only way we're going to have the energy and the fuel that we need. The only way is to savor the rest of God. And it doesn't end with us, or even our time on this earth. It culminates in the marriage of heaven and earth. We've already talked about that. The ending that we're walking towards, the hope we have, isn't to be perfect now, but it's the perfection that awaits us. When Jesus returns, he will bring with him a new world. We will be made new, and the world will as well. All will be well with us and the world. The little rests we experience now will become a big, eternal rest that will not be disrupted and will never end. And what we have before us is a taste of that new heavens and earth. At the Lord's Supper, we surrender who we are to all that he is. And as we look forward to our future, we get to look forward to a future with him. A future of one who is making all things new, even now. Now, those who have come to Jesus already, this table is for you. If you have come to Jesus, that means you listen to how he tells you to live. That means we follow through in the way that he tells us to live. It doesn't mean you're perfect. It just means you're obedient. It's for those who have surrendered to Jesus' gift of rest and given up on our own broken forms of it. And that's for everyone who calls himself a Christian. Now, if you haven't done that yet, though, if that's not who you follow, Jesus is not who you follow yet. We're really glad that you're here. But this is a meal for people who do follow Jesus. And he's clear as to what that means. So don't follow through here and be all churchy and not actually follow through the rest of your life. This is not a religious, empty religious ceremony. This is an overflow of what Jesus has already done within us. Now, for all of us who are stumbling towards Jesus together, and stumbling is what we do, as we come to him, as we learn from him, what we get to taste is rest. We might be eating this bread, what we're tasting is rest. We might be drinking this wine, what we're tasting is rest. And Jesus has bought it for us. The bread was the cost of his body, broken for us, so we would never be broken, so that work would never break us, so that this life would never break us. And this wine, and there is juice here available as well, it's a symbol of Jesus' blood poured out for us, so we wouldn't spend our lives endlessly pouring out, never receiving anything in return. I'm not saying you have to pour this much, by the way. I love it when it glugs in the morning. What we're about to do is we're going to sing some songs. And as we sing, we have three songs we're going to sing. As we sing, take your time in whatever part of the song or whichever song you want to come up, take some bread, take some wine. And there's juice here available as well. And also, if you are gluten-free, there's a gluten-free wafer on top of the juice. And take time to, as you eat the bread, and I made the chunks kind of big, so it's not a little tiny wafer morsel, it's a little something you can actually chew on a little bit. Think of what it means to savor God's rest. What might that mean this week? What might that mean this year? Because none of us have done it perfectly last year. So how could that change over this next year? What does it mean to savor God's rest? Before you think of work, before you think of planning, before you think of all the things that you really want to do for 2024, and I'm sure they're really great, they will not be great if we don't savor God's rest now. We're going to talk about this again next week, only from a different perspective. So it's not like something like, okay, now we did this, now let's work like crazy. No, we're going to do this, we're going to spend some time, savor it, and drink a little bit of wine, have a little bit of bread, and think of the rest that God has won for you through Jesus. Let me pray.